With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
President Trump's suggestion that the U.S. may import more beef from Argentina to reduce record retail prices, triggering backlash from across the cattle industry. Producer groups arguing new imports would do little to ease cost for consumers while creating added market instability at a time when domestic supplies are already stretched thin. Economists estimate Argentina accounts for roughly 2% of total U.S. beef imports, far too little, they say, to materially affect prices. Now, industry organizations, including National Cattlemen's Beef Association, American Farm Bureau Federation, and National Farmers Union, warning that policy signals alone can move futures markets and discourage herd rebuilding. U.S. cattle numbers remain at their lowest in nearly 75 years after years of drought and high feed costs, and recent restrictions on live imports from Mexico further tightening supply. Futures markets dropped sharply following the president's comments before stabilizing to start the week. Again, farm groups urging the administration to strengthen transparency, enforce fair competition among packers, and rebuild domestic capacity rather than relying on foreign beef. Export movement tilting bullish for corn and wheat while soybeans trailed last year's pace. For the week ending October 16th, inspections, according to USDA, totaling 1.32 million tons for corn. That's up from 1.2 million last week and well above the 1 million mark a year ago. For wheat, 480,000 tons. That is up from last week and quite a bit higher from last year. Now, soybeans clearing 1.47 million tons. It's a rebound week over week, but still well below the year earlier. And sorghum remained light at 2,100 tons. Marketing year to date, corn inspections reaching 9.3 million tons. Last year, same time, 5.8. For soybeans, this year it's 5.5 compared to 8 million last year. This year for wheat, 11.2 million, 9.3 million last year. And the U.S. Cattlemen's Association, USCA, urging policymakers to consider the realities that face ranchers before pursuing federal action on beef prices. Group's response follows recent White House comments promising steps to lower retail beef cost. Justin Tupper is president of USCA and says that adjusted for wages, beef remains one of the most affordable proteins. Well, producers facing a policy built for leverage, and that's according to U.S. Trade Representative Ambassador Jamison Greer, who says maintaining roughly 55% tariffs on Chinese goods is good status quo. Strategy is keeping pressure on Beijing while allowing targeted deals favoring U.S. producers, reflecting a shift toward managed trade rather than across-the-board liberalization. Speaking earlier this month at the Economic Club of New York, Greer said the administration intends to keep tariffs as a long-term tool until China addresses broader concerns like rare earth, intellectual property, and export restrictions. It's Agriculture Today.
You hear that? That's the sound of forever. Because there's nowhere else you'd rather spend forever than on land like this. Tending a herd, growing crops, raising a family. At Capital Farm Credit, we thrive at helping the next generation of farmers and ranchers like yourself by providing advice, products, and opportunities to help you build a life on the land you love most. To learn more, visit CapitalFarmCredit.com. Capital Farm Credit. Together, we're better.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
This is Agriculture Today.
Markets have kind of continued to kind of rock and roll. They did take a little bit setback in the beginning of October, but they've really rebounded since then.
Elliot Dennis, livestock economist, University of Nebraska at Lincoln.
Most of the 5-6 weights, you know, are somewhere in the realm of, you know, 448 to the 501 dollars per hundred weight. So still on steers. I mean, we're still pretty strong. Just the sales that are going through, we still have quite a bit of volume starting to happen and pick up as people are starting beginning to wean. So really kind of continues to support the idea that markets can kind of continue to trend higher as long as we kind of continue to have strong demand from consumers being pulled down. You know, markets were kind of in a lull right now. Some of that had to do with some of the supply situation, kind of figuring it out. Some of the government shutdown and kind of the idea of, you know, where the prices are going to be reported. A lot of those prices kind of had kind of backed off. And then the individual market reports have really picked up. We started to realize where can we start to get information if we don't, there's not publicly reported data. And so I think we've kind of sorted through some of those issues in the market. And now we're able to kind of pick back up where we left off. Yeah, live cattle was really the exciting thing that happened this week. Supplies, once again, are still tight, you know, almost in Nebraska, you know, in the 240 range on the live weight. And really, could we have gone a little bit higher given where the futures market was trading at, particularly early or middle of the week? Given that just kind of where the basis was at, we probably could have gone a little bit higher, but really strong underlying fundamentals as far as the cash market. Now, the futures market had a little bit of a, I would say kind of a hiccup towards the end of the week, really kind of broke technicals going into Thursday. Everyone was really tracking contract records. And then on Friday had a kind of announcement from President Trump that came out saying that they were going to do something in the beef complex. That kind of really sent the market in kind of a downspin. A lot of that was algorithmic trading that kind of captures headlines and then they trade on it. And so essentially what that would mean, given kind of Trump's background, would be something to do a trade. There's a lot of speculation about kind of, is it going to be bringing more Argentinian beef? Do we relax kind of some of our trading relationships with Brazil to bring in more beef? Because we know a lot of that demand for beef right now is coming in the form of kind of grind or kind of ground beef. And then there was kind of even some chatter about, you know, do we buy, you know, fat cattle that's in boxes from Mexico? So I think that's generally where the market was at, and it was really put the market in a tough position, just down across the board, all contracts.
And a hot topic has been rare earth minerals.
In certain locations in the United States, you can't actually have mineral development because it's under federal land. And so when they talk about, at least in kind of the oil and gas space, they're talking about allowing drilling to happen or development of minerals that we know is out there to kind of help increase supply. Currently with like the Forest Service and other national basically properties, we have the ability to graze it under basically contracts. Those are based upon AUMs. Those AUMs are then allocated and competitively bid on, but really can be passed down. And so kind of in this context of expanding, like could we expand more lands that have the ability to graze on under those? Or do we expand AUMs, number of AUMs that can be out there? But really, once again, is this going to change the underlying fundamentals of supply? No, not really. It may be create incentives to say like, well, we don't have enough land to graze. You know, if we open up more grazing land, that's going to be many, many years before we experience the benefits of it, not the short term, you know, higher prices we're paying at the store by consumers.
It's Agriculture Today.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
China's Communist Party is holding its fourth plenum in Beijing this week.
David Scudd is an APAC market analyst with StoneX.
It will bring together the Central Committee, the party's top decision-making body, to set the strategic direction for China in the years ahead. Normally, the fourth plenum focuses on internal party matters, but this year's meeting carries extra significance. Because earlier sessions were delayed, this one has been used to lay the groundwork for China's next five-year plan, which will cover the years 2026 through to 2030. The plan will shape policy across every part of the Chinese economy. The timing is especially significant this year. As we've seen in recent data, China's economy is facing persistent challenges. Weak internal demand, high local government debt, and a deep slump in property, which is showing no signs of slowing down. Adding continued tensions with the United States and sluggish global trade, and it's clear that Beijing needs to outline a credible path forward. The big question is whether China will finally pivot towards stronger domestic consumption, or stick with its old model of investment and export-led growth. Markets will also be watching for signs of how much emphasis the leadership team puts on innovation, green development, and self-reliance in strategic industries, especially semiconductors and AI. While the plenum itself is held behind closed doors, the official communique released once it wraps up will be closely read for clues. Even small shifts in language on growth priorities, fiscal policy, or the balance between security and development can ripple through markets, influencing everything from commodity demand to regional currencies. In short, what emerges from Beijing this week won't just shape China's next 5 years. It'll help set the tone for how the world's second largest economy engages with the rest of the world.
Arlen Suderman is chief commodities analyst with StoneX.
Another way for President Xi to also establish his authority and his power in China among the leaders of the Communist Party. This is something in the last meeting where Xi did to establish his power as well. If he comes out of that, and we're not going to see this in headlines most likely, but if he comes out of that feeling strong and in control, he may play a tougher role against President Trump. If he comes out of it feeling like there are cracks in the foundation of his support, he may be more anxious for some type of deal. Regardless, I do not expect a deal to allow rare earth minerals to come to the United States that might be used, the higher grade levels that might be used for production of defense weapons. I absolutely think they're going to hold the line on that. There may be a deal to allow low and mid-grade rare earth minerals and magnets to come to the United States for production of consumer goods and industrial goods. But they're probably, if that happens, probably continue to see requirements that manufacturer provide proprietary information on how those products are produced. And so that probably, if that were to happen, a continuation of what we've seen here in recent months from China. So I do not expect this meeting to solve all of our problems with China, even if there is some type of deal. I think those are pretty significant and will continue on for a while. But the opportunity does exist for some type of an agreement that could ease tensions a bit for now and may allow some resumption of demand for soybeans at some level.
Now, the latest plan comes at a time of growing challenges and uncertainty for China. It's Agriculture Today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Let's talk about cotton research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses. And that's just the start. You grow the cotton research and promotion program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Yeah, this is kind of really the one that has really hit us this week was the CFTC Commitment of Traders report.
Elliot Dennis is a University of Nebraska at Lincoln livestock economist, says during this government shutdown, we are missing some reports.
This is kind of shows where everyone's positions is, long, shorts, managed money, and they were managed money was sitting in a particular position that when these kind of down change started happening, kind of through the chatter that they were kind of liquidating their positions. We don't know that for sure because we don't have those commitment of traders reports. So I think some of that information that we use to kind of understand kind of where movements are coming, where is money flow happening, we're just kind of blind right now. And so I think that is one example of kind of the impacts of a report that we're unable to replicate. And so a lot of it's just kind of through informal conversations, but nothing that's really, I guess, permanent from the government. And that's why I think even though we might realize that we can do a lot of things potentially without the government, but there's a lot of things that the government provides as like a public service that really help the economy run and move and for really markets to have transparency.
So what's happening in the industry and is demand holding up?
The packers that keep getting hammered, higher live cattle prices that they're having to pay. You know, boxes are really following the futures and cash is really leading the way from on the live cattle there. But really kind of big thing that came out towards the end of the week was these settlements. Over the last, you know, 3 or 4 years, we've heard the smaller groups of producers start to litigate against some of the major packers, Tyson, Cargill, JBS, National Beef. All of the major packers have some sort of lawsuit against them, basically accusing them of conspiring to inflate beef prices during really COVID-19 and a little bit earlier than that. But two of these were settled this past week. In addition to the one that was settled by JBS earlier, Tyson Foods and Cargill basically agreed to pay about $88 million collectively to settle those lawsuits. Now, this is basically payment without admission of wrongdoing. And so they're settling this outside of out of court. And so that's kind of combined. The one with National Beef is still ongoing. But this kind of that was the major thing that was kind of hitting the market that they were kind of sorting out in the beginning. And something that was certainly a piece of legislation that the Biden administration was really kind of pushing, which was this competitive markets, really trying to prevent monopolies and basically manipulative pricing. That was a huge thing that they were pushing in there. And some of these have kind of started to conclude now that they've been in kind of litigation for the last 3 or 4 years. Beef demand is at an all-time high. Really, when we started tracking beef demand since early 2000, when we started developing these indices, we're at the highest levels that we've ever experienced, and by a long shot, both in Q1, Q2, and now heading into the, finishing up the Q3, like we've had record demand. And really what we see is that beef tends to be a high feature item. People, when they're going, they're spending, their basket of goods. Beef is, is a huge, huge value of that. And retailers know that they're featuring beef at all time levels. And consumers are continuing to pay higher prices, and that's why we're seeing kind of that demand go up. When we think about kind of relative prices, we think they can buy different either beef or they can buy pork. Consumers are continuing to buy beef products, even though there are alternative substitutes. And really what we call that elasticity, how price-sensitive people are. But they've really shown some resilience that, I think kind of entering kind of these different phases of potentially of kind of where demand is and how much substitution actually happens amongst consumers.
It's Agriculture Today.
At Wiley Implement and Spray Center, we are here to keep your Case IH tractors, planters, sprayers, and other implements in tip-top shape this season. Whether you need in-shop or in-field service, Wiley has the factory-trained technicians to keep your equipment running with genuine Case IH parts. Give us a call today or go to WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
You hear that? That's the sound of forever. Because there's nowhere else you'd rather spend forever than on land like this. Tending a herd, growing crops, raising a family. At Capital Farm Credit, we thrive at helping the next generation of farmers and ranchers like yourself by providing advice, products, and opportunities to help you build a life on the land you love most. To learn more, visit CapitalFarmCredit.com. Capital Farm Credit. Together, we're better.
This is Agriculture Today.
This is going to be one that's frustrating because we've seen this play out before.
Josh Linville is with StoneX, talks about potential farmer assistance.
When the money comes to the farmers and it starts to hit the checkbooks, it doesn't fundamentally change the S&D of the fertilizer market. It's not that we're gaining acres. It's not that we're gaining demand. But what it does is it changes the demand timing. And that's almost just as important as what the overall S&D is. Farmers, for the most part, all summer and most of the way through the fall, have been sitting there saying, my economics stink. I don't have a lot of money. I am not going to spend it on inputs. I am not going to spend it on fertilizer. And because of that, the entire value chain has been doing the same thing. I'm going to reduce the number of tons I'm buying. I'm going to have less in place. Well, if all of a sudden these checks start to hit, that can pull all this demand forward. All these guys can sit there and say, well, I've got money in my pocket. I need to raise a crop next year. Let's go ahead and buy the fertilizer. And if we had this massive groundswell of demand that pops up all of a sudden, it can support prices on the near term. So that's kind of our expectation. When these checks start to hit, we think a lot of it's going to be spent on fertilizer to raise next year's crop, and that could boost price ideas.
Which gets us back to the U.S. crop and world supplies. Arlen Suderman with StoneX.
World supplies have been trending lower, up higher this year, although we anticipate as USDA reopens and has a chance to assess this year's U.S. crop, that will come down somewhat. But overall, we're looking at roughly a 9% stocks to use ratio. And so that means that's an adequate supply, but it's not much margin for error if something were to go wrong. Now, that's a big if. We don't know if that will happen, but that's what it's saying, that we're relatively hand-to-mouth in world corn supplies, even though we just we're harvesting a bumper crop in the United States, although getting smaller, and a bumper crop, following a bumper crop in South America. When we look at wheat supplies, a little over 14% there, about 14.1 or 14.2%. When we look at world-ending stocks as a percent of usage, when we take out the United States and China. Now, I explained why we took out China, because they don't export anything notable. Why take out the United States here? We know that we have a massive supply in the United States, so I'm looking at the rest of the major, the rest of the world here to see what their supply is and when that might come short, bringing them back to the United States. Notice the longer term trend that we have here going back since about 2008 or so, trending lower. So we do continue to trend lower there as well. Corn and wheat are interchangeable in much of the world, both of them trending lower. So we're moving in that direction. The bottom line is here, world supplies of soybeans are quite adequate right now. World supply of corn and wheat are trending lower over the last decade plus. They're still adequate to meet that demand, but we're trending weaker. That leaves us in a situation of low prices now. It leaves us in a difficult part of the ag cycle where we face low prices, and that could still extend for another year or two or three. We don't know that. But also we would say that both corn and wheat are in a situation where if something unanticipated would happen to interrupt that production and or the trade of such, that it wouldn't take much to pull us out of that cycle, so to speak, into a better price cycle, so to speak, or demand for corn and wheat type of thing. So while we're in the bearish part of the ag cycle right now, that could change. We just don't have, and it wouldn't be that difficult to get it to change. We just don't have that triggering mechanism in place right now to do so.
It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
When we think about the impact of our trade policy, certainly our focus is on the domestic policy aspect of it, which is, you know, jobs for our working class and middle class, et cetera. But there's a national security component to this as well.
U.S. Trade Representative Ambassador Jamison Greer.
When you think about the fact that, you know, during COVID, we couldn't get certain semiconductors across the ocean. And that wasn't just because of a China thing. I mean, this was from Taiwan, right? This is an ally. This is a place where we have a lot of ties. We couldn't get chips from Taiwan due to COVID. I mean, it shows a vulnerability. Pharmaceuticals. We only make, I think, 8% of antibiotics we need here in America. A lot of our inputs for pharmaceuticals come from China or maybe India. And just putting aside geopolitical challenges, that's very challenging and not a secure place to be in. We need to be able to have these critical supply chains back here in the U.S. as much as possible or as close to the U.S. as possible, in North America preferably.
Speaking earlier this month at the Economic Club of New York about the U.S. investment into rare earth mineral refinement.
We have started to reestablish those supply chains here in the U.S. This administration, through the Department of War, took a stake in investment in MP Materials. This is the Mountain Pass Mine in California, which is one of our core facilities to be able to produce these materials. And so we have a stake in it because we want to make sure that the United States is in a position to never have any country have this kind of leverage against us again. We have a bunch of startups as well, one in Texas, a couple other places that are doing this. We have, again, Defense Department, industrial-based folks scouring the country to find these startups to make sure that they have the economic resources they need. And we're also working with our allies in the G7 and elsewhere, with Australia. I was just in Malaysia last week, and I was talking to them about how we can, you know, leverage the Malaysian capability. They have some of the largest capacity outside of China to process rare earth minerals. So we're taking an all-hands-on-deck approach.
Now, Elliot Dennis is a University of Nebraska at Lincoln livestock economist.
Wouldn't say it's a formal announcement. The announcement was, you know, tweeted out by President Trump saying that something big was going to happen. Something big did happen as far as kind of the reaction to it. And really that they're really targeting kind of this price of beef. But we kind of go back to what Secretary Rawlins had talked about earlier in the month when they were this first thing came out that the federal government was going to kind of do something about it. And the real argument was that she said nothing is going to be done in the form of direct payments to producers. Everything that they have planned on are focusing on kind of opening up working lands to grazing and really expanding risk mitigation tools. So when you think about in other sectors, kind of where we've seen that happen, we've seen kind of coal development in Utah kind of open up, kind of releasing federal lands for kind of natural resource development. Could you see something like that happen on federal land grazing? We already have BLM, forest land, but do we increase allocations in that space? And we think about risk mitigation tools, RMA, subsidy levels potentially could change there. That's one of the levers that they have. But really, when we think about the suite of risk management tools that producers have, we pretty much have the full array of tools, at least now with the introduction of Wingcast risk protection that's available in a select number of states. So whether that gets rolled out in other states, I think those are the types of things that they're talking about rather than kind of regulatory changes. So really at the end of the last week, it was more of kind of a sit and wait. Normally when we've kind of hit these, you know, corrections with high momentum, high relative strength, we've broken the resistance on the Bollinger Bands for the technicals. Normally it's a 2 or 3 days, you know, that we start to kind of trade sideways or a little bit down, and then the markets can pick back up.
It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.